Welcome, Dr. James Beckett, Sports Card Insights, another listener question episode. These are 1 minute apiece kinds of things that I hope are helpful to you. I'm always trying to provide sports card insights. Thanks, sponsors, Beckett Media, Beckett Grading, Beckett Authentication, CompC.com, Burbank Sports Cards, Mike Stadium Sports Cards, Heritage Auctions, Sargent Scott Auctions, Panini, Upper Deck, and Tops. Getting right to it, Golden Slumber. Most people like it when I'm talking to anybody, I think. I think they like the episodes when it's just me, but he's commenting on one of my conversations with John Newman. Could have been Rich Klein, could have been John Keating, could have been Torsten Bauer, any of my regular guests and other podcasters that have a good time. We have some rapport now. So he enjoyed that. He was commenting about show dealers that either display card prices or don't. Most buyers want card prices there. The sellers have good reason to not have one. It's a hassle. And number two, they want to invite discussion and sound out the person. The dealer has a choice. And as a buyer, you can keep moving if you don't want to do that. But a lot of times, if somebody's got some nice stuff there, you're going to want to at least inquire. They may say, I just got these. I didn't have time to price them. And there may be some good reason. So don't always move on, but move on if you don't see anything of interest at any price. Because he says he wants some time to go through the dollar boxes. I'm wondering how many collectors out there do bargain boxes and showcases. I guess it's more than I think. I've been thinking because I see some of the same people at the dollar boxes. And then I see some people that are never at the dollar boxes that are totally working the already slabbed under glass showcase cards. And so that's interesting. So anyway, Golden Slumber's talking about, regardless of where he's going, he wants to get a sense of who he's dealing with to get a conversation going. And even if it's a dollar box person, you still want to know who you're dealing with and you want to know if they're agreeable. The other thing is the dollar box, again, people don't like it if they're looking at a showcase and nothing is marked. To me, that's similar to going into a bargain box where they're marked, but they're color-coded. And it might be that the yellow ones are $1 and the green ones are $2 and the blue ones are $3, something like that. So again, that's confusing to me. Or that everything in the box is 50% off. 50% off what? Same thing with going up to a table that doesn't have anything marked, but everything's half off. Again, it depends on what is the half off. Okay, I got a comment about the statistical odds and the treatment. A lot of people now have seen or heard about when I pulled that Michael Jordan autograph on a box that I bought from Huggins and Scott. I pulled the Michael Jordan significant signature on the next to last pack in the box. And by statistical theory, I really should not have opened the next pack. Because with the way boxes are configured, it is extremely unlikely there would be a great card in that next pack. I'd already gotten the box and maybe even the case hit. And that's what happens in a store when you buy loose packs. It might be that those are packs where the best thing in the box was gotten than the dealer. So there's statistical reasoning behind that. But that's why people should buy sealed boxes. But even then, it might be the sealed box, but they already got the case hit from the other sealed box that they opened. But then the question is, that was when I did the SP Authentic, and I had two other different boxes. Now, those, I should still have opened those. If they were a good deal originally, they're still a good deal. My odds don't change based on the fact that I got the Michael Jordan autograph. That has no effect. Those are completely independent trials, as a statistician would say. So I did open them, and I did not get good stuff, but that's just because most boxes are disappointing. Like I said, when I go to Las Vegas, it's hard for me to at the poker tables on the Texas Hold'ems to quit while I'm ahead. I usually get ahead because I play the odds, but I'm not a great bluffer. So people figure that out. And so I need to stop when I'm ahead. That's the same thing with cards. If you got a big hit, then again, you could stop your head. But each time you buy something new, you have a chance to get some. The next box could be next to a completely different independent truck. Okay, I've mentioned a lot of stuff about velocity of sales and how fast things sell and the liquidity. But there's also a concept of viscosity, which is the thickness, like syrup. It doesn't go through. There's friction. And to me, that's like the speed of the transaction, that certain cards are viscous. They're hard to move. They're hard to move because perhaps a lot of explaining is required. Making a deal with them, you've got confusing comps, perhaps. And that's why some of these cards that have a lot of velocity also have low viscosity. They just sell so easily and so frequently. And frankly, that's part of the appeal of the dollar box. That's the best viscosity you can have. You might think those are sludge cards, but they're not. You pick 50 cards out of the dollar box and you're going to pay $50 or less. And it's no big deal. But the showcase cards, if you're trying to buy 50 cards out of a showcase, that transaction is not going to go as fast. There's, I pick out my $50 box cards. Like I said, I can reach in for a $50 bill and I may or may not get change back, but that's a done deal. You pick out 50 cards from a showcase and try to look them all up. It's tricky. So viscosity, new concept there. Okay. Another, as I get into the words of this, this was another discussion I had with somebody, and that is, and just understand the words. Are you more into collecting or are you more into your collection? I think to me, that's kind of the difference between active and passive. I think I'm more into collecting because I want to keep moving. I love to organize my collection and prepare the things I don't want to find a new home. But it was really difficult when we were doing the magazines and all the price guides. I really couldn't be much of a collector other than the type cards for the books. But I always at heart have been a collector and I've had a good collection, but I think I'm more into collecting. And so same thing. Are you more into investing or are you more into your investments? To me, it's better to be active than passive, dealing or being a dealer. I think that if you're staying tuned in, you're going to be in the action part of it. So I was coming up with some definitions here that a pure collector is somebody that buys but does not sell. A pure dealer is someone who sells but does not buy for his or her personal collection. Okay? You might buy inventory, but you're not buying for your personal use. What is an investor? An investor is someone who does buy, sell, and hold. What is a flipper? A flipper does buy and sell, but no hold. They don't hold. They flip. Okay. So those are just some quick definitions of what people talk about. Next from Golden Slumber, talking about autograph cards. Not real enamored. It's a big deal, especially if somebody dies. But he mentions, I guess he's done the through the mail, the TTM. And he regards that as a time killer and sometimes unfruitful. I used to do that, and it wasn't a big time killer, but it was sometimes unfruitful. But now I look back over many years, many of those ones I sent off for, I've done well. Of course, it's been decades, but I do think there's an enhancement of just simply because it has the athlete, because the athlete touched it. The athlete put his or mostly his or her autograph on there. And to have a beautiful card without an autograph, to have a beautiful card with an autograph, they can both be beautiful cards. Let's see. Golden Slumber again. He agrees. He likes watching the break videos to see what's going on. Probably a good idea to try a few break videos of a product you're thinking about, unless you're in so early that it hasn't happened yet. But he thinks it's possible some of the breakers get loaded boxes to generate product enthusiasm. And I do not believe that. I have guys I work with very closely, very high integrity. It just, that was a secret that could not be kept. And if you did, if I were a breaker and I knew I was getting some big time cards in there, guaranteed, I wouldn't put through the break. I'd buy my own break. I'd say, I'm just going to keep this case. Now, you'd have potentially a problem there if the card companies found out. But again, this is like a conspiracy. You could extort the other person if you knew that. So I don't believe that is happening at all. I just think the bigger breakers get more product and are more likely to get some big cards. Another analogy I was thinking, if you want to get a big fish, you go deep sea fishing. Two things I learned about deep sea fishing when I went one time, I only need to go one time, you get seasick and it's way more expensive. Okay. It's an experience. So I'm fishing in the dollar box pond. There's no fight with the big fish. You're just reeling them in as fast as you can. And to me, that's fun. Like I say, it's panning for gold. They're little tiny nuggets that other people have left behind. So I'm not going to get a big fish, but I would suppose if I took a lot of these nuggets from the dollar box, and I probably am doing this to some degree, you sell them off, package them out, and then you got enough to get a bigger fish and you could trade up. But it starts with buying for less than what you could sell something for. Okay, one more here from Bob Boozle, a frequent contributor. He jumps in on Jeremy Lee's Sports Cards Live. This is a good question, Bob. Thank you very much. Can you give a couple of examples of card innovations that at the time of their release made you excited to collect? More than a couple, Bob, but I thought Game Use was really cool. I think they've not beaten it to death, but Game Use cards, kind of overdone relics, but some of them are really cool. On-card autographs, again, they've overdone it. There's some beautiful on-card certified autographs and the combo autographs. And the next one is, and I was excited in 1957 with the combo cards, that card number 400 and card number 407, the Dodgers and Yankees combo cards. I thought that was an innovation. They'd had some 53 Bowman, and batter-ups had some combo cards, but 57 with Topps, that was a big deal. All-Star cards in 1958 in my neighborhood, that was the first Dan Musial card, and Mickey Mantle. Those two were triple prints, so they were all over the place, but the design was different. It was really good. And then serial numbering, I think, is a big deal. I think that's brought some order and, on balance, a very positive thing. And finally, just the chrome. As soon as baseball cards did not have to be packaged with gum, they could use special paper and ink that didn't have to pass the food drug because it wasn't a food product anymore. It was just cards. So chrome, the various chrome, prism, finest technologies, Dufex, all those things. That's been great. One more, and I'm going to turn this into a positive, but this is from Brent. He said, ComC treated me like dirt. Worst customer service I've ever received. I have had the opposite experience. No company's perfect. They've got a whole bunch of employees. I just know from our customer service experience, the customers come up with interesting questions. There's no book of answers that cover every customer service issue. My sense from what I've heard, Brent, is not that. It's that they have gotten behind occasionally. They're a victim of their own success, and they get behind on shipping. And I think they've hired and systematized and done a lot of things. If ComC were to give virtual tours, say they did a video, maybe they've already done this, but I haven't seen it, showing how they do what they do to an extent. Again, that'd be competitive. Somebody else say, hey, I think I'll compete with them. And we had that thought when we were doing Beckett Publications. You don't want to show them exactly how the sausage is made. But if you saw the scope and all the positive things that ComC was doing, I think you wouldn't have that attitude. Frankly, worst customer service you've ever received means you received it. The worst customer service is silence. And there are some companies in the industry that have done that. Silence doesn't work. And silence is, people tell their friends when it's silence. If you give an answer, even if it's, I don't know the answer, but I will find out and I will email you, or I will get the answer to you tomorrow. You better do it tomorrow. Even if it's, I couldn't get the answer, I'm going to try one more source. But silence is not good. Again, I think customer service that doesn't give you what you want is still customer service. That's not the worst. The worst is being in limbo, being stuck. And on the shipping, I had the same problem. When you're running a company, you have guidelines and standards, but occasionally something will slip through the cracks. It's not intentional. It's just with the huge volume, you're going to have some piece of mail that gets lost or misplaced, and it could be 0.1% or less. But still, if that's you, it matters. So anyway, thanks, Brent, and give ComC another chance. Give all my sponsors another, give everybody in the industry another chance, because mostly good people, mostly really good people. Thanks. The man.